Thank you, Guy. With me today is Ted Middleton from Verizon. I'll let Ted introduce himself in just a moment. And Matt Trentler from Dolby also. Matt, you want to go ahead and get started?
Yeah, hey guys. I'm the Senior Security Manager at Dolby over the Cybersecurity Group. So I've been doing this for over 16 years. Worked with larger tech companies prior to Dolby. Bring a variation of knowledge in the space.
All right, good. And Ted?
So hi, I'm Ted Middleton. I'm the Chief Product Officer for Verizon Digital Media Services. So we have a fairly broad portfolio, a combination of CDN content delivery services, media, content creation, management, and distribution services, and increasingly applications that reside on top of those platforms to help content creators create and deliver content in the cloud and over the internet.
Excellent. I think we need to keep our mics just a little bit higher so that our audience can hear us. Is that better? Good. So cloudy things are something that's near and dear to my heart because my background is in production, post-production, network content security. And for us at Dolby, I think what's interesting is we're experiencing this evolution like all media companies do and have done over the recent years. And through that, we're experiencing a tremendous amount of discovery and greater understanding of our business operations. And of the services that are available to us to enable us in that endeavor. Matt, you want to tell us a little bit about what you're running into?
Yeah, so as things are moving to the cloud, what we're seeing are engineers are smart, and they're going there regardless if we want them to or not, or regardless if we're involved with them or not. So we want to partner with them. That's the main goal, to ensure that they're going there, and they're going there fast, but in a secure manner.
So tell us a little bit, Ted, about what Verizon is doing to make these services most useful to us and really, really ease our entrance into the foray of leveraging cloud or anything. Let's use the descriptor of it, whatever is outside of our facilities.
Sure. So all of our services are either cloud services or edge deployed services. So we're a mixture of a combination of part of just how the internet works, being a CDN service operator. So our infrastructure is part of what powers, multiple terabits per second worth of capacity on the internet. This basically makes the internet perform and scale and be reliable. So that's one set of things that we do. And then the other set of things that we do from a content creator and, video production perspective is allow content creators to securely deliver content to their, subscribers and consumers, and so making sure that we offer facilities that protect content, protect access to that content, secure and encrypt, and also protect the applications that serve that content. So it's one thing to basically DRM or token authenticate or geo-restrict your content, but we're also protecting the applications that sit behind our infrastructure through things like web application firewalls and DDoS protections and bot mitigation, and so some of those kind of horizontal security services that operate at the edge.
So, Matt, and knowing what you do about our small operation at Dolby, and obviously we do that for the purposes of enabling our technologies, right? So it is quite boutique. And it isn't where we come from, right? I mean, obviously, we're a robust company of engineers, but it's not the type of technology that we primarily develop. So how are you going to make this easier on us? Because this seems abstract, right? I mean, this seems difficult to adopt. I'm not familiar with any of the terms that Ted is mentioning. I am familiar with the terms that Ted is mentioning, but by and large, that's not the responsibility of the production team. So how are you going to make that easier on us? How are you going to introduce these solutions to us?
I think that's an ideal point, right? Let security experts be the experts in security instead of putting it on the engineer. Let the engineer be experts at what they're specializing in. So our approach is actually partnering with engineering, kind of understanding their workflows, where they're going or what they're trying to do, really what their goals are. And then, as a partnership, develop solutions for them. So, as opposed to the traditional security model where folks are kind of a hindrance, or maybe they're just saying no and that's the standard security model, this is more of a partnership and an immersion of security and engineering together to come up with a secure solution at the end.
And how do you explain to us why we need to do this? Because it seems to be impeding, it seems to be challenging, it seems to be an obstacle, it seems to feels like it's going to add some barriers and prevent us from being as efficient as we possibly can be.
Yeah. So, again, that's where we can apply our expertise. And, you know, for example, we can create pre-hardened templates or, you know, the CloudFormation templates and things like that within AWS, for example, hand this to engineering, and it's basically an environment within a script. All they do is apply it, click a button, and they already have an environment created for them in full, and it's hardened. As opposed to the engineer developing an environment, taking 30 days where they could spend 30 days working on content, right?
Absolutely. And I have a lot of experience working with Verizon, and I think what Verizon has done through the years is phenomenal in partnering with the media industry and really understanding the workflows, and I think bringing new technologies to us at a faster tick, but also making it easy to adopt. Tell me what you think you're doing differently with media and entertainment in order to secure that trust and those relationships.
So a big part of it is an understanding, you know, broadcasters, networks, affiliates, digital media producers in general, whether they, you know, start from a giant multi-billion-dollar organization, or it's, you know, kind of the democratization of content that's happening, and it's someone who's getting on the web to produce content, try to grow an audience. So in terms of security, I echo the similar comments that Matt just made. Making it easy, making it kind of point and clickable. You don't have to be a security expert. You don't have to be a software developer or engineer. Making sure that both those content production workflows and all the tools and capabilities of, you know, getting your content to your audience, and then making sure it's getting to the right audience and not the wrong audience. And then also on those protection layers, you know, you don't have to know a lot about what bots are or the destructive things that they can do. You need someone like ourselves and our partners that have that expertise to be on the lookout for all the different ways that they can, you know, exfiltrate or data or steal content or steal capacity and resources, and making sure that we have the tools that literally point and click your way to those defenses.
Absolutely. And how is this enabling our business, Matt? So again, am I faster? Am I saving time? Am I saving money?
So, like I said, leave the expertise to us so we can save you time, right? So we'll basically give you 30 days back. For example, we're working with a group now that's doing encoding in the cloud, and they've spent months developing this entire infrastructure and solution. They came to us, and we templatized it for them. So it's just a matter of, to Ted's point, it's easy, and it's a couple of clicks.
Yeah, one of the things I think gets lost is the burden of having to potentially remediate an environment while you're working in production. It's not something you can stop, and whether that's over a weekend or weeks or months, it typically is much more complex. And I think that risk factor is greater than the original investment in time and effort to build it properly and securely from the onset. I think that the other thing that we forget in the media and entertainment environment is that content is IP. So that's equal to the new technologies that we're developing. That content is, in fact, what is most precious to us. And anyone who's handling content on behalf of the studios is obviously protecting IP that is inherently not theirs to lose. So I think these are the things that we need to remember and ensure that we're prioritizing the structure at the very beginning and partnering with both our internal departments and the service providers who have experience in this area. And that's what's important to me is also communicating the sensitivity and understanding that we have been here before, and it is complicated and it is difficult and it does take time and it is somehow impeding, but it is also ultimately more efficient because we don't have to sacrifice that remediation in the future. Do you have any examples of that, Ted? Anything you guys can share with us?
Well, I think it's so looking at it from a software engineering and application development perspective, and it reflects, you know, content and media applications, is there's a lot more awareness of those risks, and the fact that if I don't design for security, design for quality, design for reliability, the time spent under duress of either an attack or an outage or something like that, coupled with the brand damage and, you know, potential penalties and things like that in certain cases, it just compounds the amount of time and energy and effort that you're going to have to spend. So when you think about, you know, automated testing tools and lifecycle and methodology tools that technologists and engineers and software engineers use, that you can see a real maturation of the engineering lifecycle that includes security and robustness.
I was going to add to that point, if you don't mind, in regards to automation, right, and scaling at the speed engineering wants to scale at or needs to scale at to get to market faster. security needs to automate as well, right? So we need to automate our remediation. You know, for example, instead of being paged at 2 a.m. in the morning and waiting for the security person to wake up and you know, troubleshoot and say, hey, is there someone in our environment? You need to apply this self-healing, if you will, type of security automation, and it's much easier to do within a cloud environment. It can be done on-site as well, but much easier to do now in a cloud environment.
So I'm going to put my production hat back on. Talk to me about what is automation and what is self-healing and how does that work?
So we'll give an example. You have an environment. It's in AWS. It's in the cloud, for example. And an attacker gets in there. A hacker breaks in. Someone misconfigures something and a hacker breaks in. If you find out, you get some alerts. Traditionally, you get a page, like I said, in the middle of the night. Your security guy would be waking up and you have to go in, do some manual troubleshooting. Now, with Lambda, for example, with an AWS and some automation, we can actually self-heal and basically self-correct a misconfiguration, for example. So, for example, an engineer, again, going back to the expert piece, they're experts at encoding and the production side, but less so in the security side. So if they misconfigure a firewall rule, for example, you can apply security automation to basically go back and fix that, you know, within seconds instead of leaving it open for weeks until an attacker finds it.
Lock the trap door. So, again, let's go back to enablement for a moment. How do you enter? So we have a new service. We have an exciting opportunity. We have 15 days to execute. Ted, what do I do? Who do I call? How do I engage? How do you assess my environment?
So there's, a lot of different components that come into play, right? So you've got your applications that you're building or that you're having you know, service providers or other partners provide to you. Making sure that you understand that those applications need to be secured if you've got, whether it's private data center or you've got cloud-based services, making sure that those have the appropriate controls. If you're using, you know, content delivery or you're using edge deployed services, making sure that you have controls there. I think the good thing is that many more of those services are available in kind of an orchestrated, you know, provide me a service manner. I think, you know, more and more companies are looking to offload the cost, complexity, and expense and skill sets that are needed to build these really, you know, complex environments. And I think to bring it back to kind of the security specific stuff, it is all about that layered model, right? So anything you're doing on the internet is going to leverage some amount of distributed edge deployed infrastructure like a CDN. It's going to involve some kind of either cloud or data center based services, and you need the appropriate protections of each layer in that infrastructure stack. And so leveraging, you know, CDN and you know, web application firewalls and DDoS protection so that you can't be attacked and your application's taken down. You know, our approach is the further you can move that out into the network and put that at the edge and save your capacity at the cloud or at the origin, that tends to be, you know, valuable compute or databases, or that's where the content is stored, making sure that those are protected with multiple layers of defense. And those are services that you can pretty easily buy and, you know, and are provided by robust third-party services. You don't have to build all that anymore.
Absolutely. Matt, we have some latency-sensitive applications. We feel we need to do some amount of production on-site. Can we have extensible environments?
In terms of automating security, for example, on-site?
In terms of implementing it, leveraging on-site content, on-site security services, and it making this extensible into a cloud environment.
So we are actually going through a transformation now, like you mentioned, right? Moving production and coding from our on-prem environment into the cloud. So it's really just a matter of partnership and ensuring that that's when it's encrypted from end to end, both in transit and out using the IRS.
And how do you handle audit in that scenario, right? Once it leaves my door, how am I sure that all of the services and controls that Ted has available to him or to us, how do I ensure that that's actually in hand? How am I comfortable with audit, with an audit environment, right? I mean, when they come into my house, I know the content is in there. I know that we lock the doors and badge the access, and we're very, very certain that that content is protected. But if I'm going to use a cloud environment, it's inherently higher risk, right? How am I going to handle that? Ted, do you want to jump in?
So I'll help you with that, yeah. And then you can kind of comment on that. So I think some of it is around making sure that the services you're consuming, the infrastructure you're using, isn't itself certified. You know, things like PCI compliant, MPAA, other certifications depending on your application. If you're in healthcare or finance, there's their own levels of certification. The other thing is around data, provisioning of whether it be logs or analytics or alerting, making sure that those are, robustly provided within the, service provider's own infrastructure, and they have, NOC and SOCs, Security Operations Center, Network Operations Center, those types of facilities where they're doing a robust job of managing their own infrastructure, but that they can also provide you data feeds in form of logs or analytics or reports or alerts, ideally that are configurable by you, the customer, so that you can see what's going on, so you can set thresholds about things that trigger alert conditions or thresholds of sensitivity that are important to you and not just, some arbitrary things.
Exactly. It sounds like a guy who's had to explain this to production teams in the past. So great. Thank you very much. Is there anything, Matt, anything you want to add about your experience in garnering adoption internally and some of the challenges that you're running into or some of the opportunities that you've devised?
Yeah, like I said, we hire engineers, we're smart engineers, we hire them because they're smart. And to the point, they're innovating themselves, and they're going to the cloud, or they're going to this fastest, point A to point B to get their job done, whether they want you to join them or not. So from a security perspective, it is definitely a partnership that needs to be applied. And it's a lot of soft skills, right? I'd say probably even more than 50% of security's job is the soft skill and partnering and customer service with your customers internally.
Absolutely. What about you, Ted?
So I think there's an element of that that triggered something in line with. There's also a certain element of safety in numbers. So as you see concentration of use of cloud services and things like that, there are risks, certainly. If Amazon or Azure or Google or some major concentration of compute power or storage have an issue, as you can see, that can affect a wide swath of applications and services on the internet. However, at the same time, the fact that there is a lot of use of open source technologies, platforms and services and APIs and orchestration tools and things like that are being tested by literally millions of different websites and applications, it's kind of like the benefit of open source itself. There's lots of eyes looking at things. There's lots of tools being developed to test and validate things or monitor things. And so I think that provides some increased help for the entire industry, which is good, as opposed to some of this, if I stood up my own infrastructure in my own data center, the chances of that having a unique set of conditions and configurations and software patches and permutations, that's a lot more permutations of that. So.
I think that's true. I think communication is a pretty primary tool. I mean, I've seen a terrific evolution over the last 5 years, certainly. And one of the things I think is interesting in retrospect, 5 years ago, we were still arguing about whether or not somebody had time to patch a server, right? You mentioned patching, or log, or scan. And now it's an absolute, it's a given. We must. And there's an understanding of those practices and of the inherent opportunity there and insurance of integrity in those practices. So I think that, as we're continuing to evolve, as we're communicating about what it is that we're learning, as these services, as you said, become more hardened and more readily available, as they become more utilized, I think people become more comfortable with the fact that these standard practices serve a purpose.
Yeah, and you can do a lot more if you think about how the technology maturation cycle is working. The fact that applications today are generating, in many cases, billions of transactions, maybe a day or a month or something like that, and, tens of billions of data points to measure in terms of log files or beacons coming back from media players or things like that. So, but at the same time, the tools that are available in the cloud community and the developer community make it so much easier than even 5 years ago to crunch that data, to create correlations between different dimensions of that data, and to observe patterns and visualize things that are going on. So, the technology is definitely keeping up and helping enable ways to understand your environment, understand your traffic patterns, understand your consumers, understand the hidden dangers lurking in those usage patterns that otherwise might have been invisible.
Well, what's also cool is that production teams are also participating in the technology now, right? I mean, they're in fact developing solutions for these obstacles or for these challenges to make it faster, to make it more seamless, to solve for the security concern. They're now participating. So now you've got, you know, what was R&D is now an IT, is now R&D, IT, and production inherently working together. You wanted to add something, Matt?
Can I previous point? So not to get like too technical, but just talking about the new things that engineers are doing, right? So the cloud is obviously one of them. Docker and containers are kind of an additional layer to that. Some folks probably heard about it, or maybe their companies are using it. But there, to this point, there are open source tools out there, security tools, that can help you scan for things and vulnerabilities or access keys and passwords and things within those containers. Otherwise, I mean, this is like the original point, engineers are going to go fast, and they don't always have security in mind.
Any additional points you want to add? I'd love to open it up for questions just for a few minutes. No? Any questions? Guy's going to grab a mic. Any questions?
Gentleman over here.
May I ask what encryption algorithms you use and the keys and all that sort of thing that you're using? Do you understand the question?
Yeah, so within AWS, we try to use encryption in pretty much everywhere that we can. It isn't an impact to performance, so we do use it at rest. AES 256, for example, in S3.
How do you handle your keys? Is that what that... How do you handle your keys?
Yeah, so I'll give you an example, right? You know, S3 is their object storage repository. Instead of having keys or access keys stored on the EC2 instance or the virtual machine in ClearText itself, they can actually be applied. AWS has a concept of roles, so you can deploy the virtual machines into a role, as they call it, and then that accesses S3. There's no actual key in ClearText being stored on the server itself. In that case,
are we back with the same gentleman?
Done. Yes.
How often do you change the keys?
In this example, there are no keys that need to be changed. The machine's deployed into a role, as AWS calls it, and it allows for the connection without storing any keys on the server. So there's no rotation necessary in that case.
I'm sorry.
He said, excuse me, jumping Jesus. Ted, do you want to respond to that as well?
Well, in ARCA, so there's different key certificates, encryption algorithms used in different services. So on the CDN side, we're typically supporting SSL or TLS, secure connections and protocol for web applications and communications, API calls, etc. Those are typically, certificates deployed by a third-party certificate authority. You can use various ciphers and key strengths on those, depending on the customer's needs or preferences.
Any other questions?
Oh, stand over there.
Okay, I got it right here. I got batteries here.
Do we want to take the mic over to him?
Yeah.
I was watching the batteries, but the indication is showing me different than what's actually happening. Yeah. Just, you got to unscrew the... Or bring it to me, I'll do it. Yeah, it's just a screw down.
Bear with us. He's got a good question, actually. So we're just swapping the mic.
Yeah, I'll keep going on some of the other elements that we have in the infrastructure. So then you look at something like DRM and asset encryption. And so, supporting, there's three primary flavors of, studio-grade DRM, there's, Widevine Play Ready.
So my question is about the use of keys. How do you exchange keys And you just said you don't use them, which scares the hell out of me. I mean, because you're using, that means then to me, you're using PKI. PKI then is using public key in infrastructure, the same, with private key, public key.
So again, a lot of the key exchange and session negotiation, if we're talking about SSL, or in his case, he was talking about AWS API key protection, managing the connection of a session to services for a period of time. Typically, those keys expire at some session interval in DRM, for example, or content encryption that we're doing on stream protection. Those keys are actually rotated several times within a given stream, even.
Also, that provides those keys.
I am not a cryptographer or a mathematician, though.
So it's Dolby and BDMS, right? So those would be appropriate questions for people like Azure and AWS. The actual cloud providers would be the key administrators. Sure. All right. Any more questions before we move on? Oh, question.
When should we make the content protected? Like before upload the cloud or after upload the cloud?
When? He's asking when.
So we actually try to encrypt it fully end-to-end. So from the consumption, using Aspera, for example, bringing it into the cloud in a secure transfer, storing it encrypted, processing it, and then sending it back encrypted as well.
Yeah, same here. So typically we're doing, from a media workflow perspective, we're doing content acquisition using a piece of software that we deploy that does the initial capture, whether it's from a camera, a capture card, HDSCI feed, some pre-encrypted VOD or live stream asset. And once it hits that piece of software, it's being prepared and encrypted, and it's encrypted on the wire up to the cloud. The cloud is then doing transformation, transcoding, packaging, generating adaptive bitrate profiles, etc. Additional DRM, like formal DRM, might be applied there, and then it's delivered encrypted all the way out to the player.
I would add too, in some extreme cases, you can encrypt the data, before uploading it to the cloud, the data itself. That way, it's encrypted, all the way through the process.
So let me just restate a little bit. So we can encrypt at rest. We, on an automated basis, encrypt in transit at every juncture during which we move from one device or one instance to another, whether that's in our own environment and or in the cloud environment.
Right.
And you can also rewrap it at rest at every point, with the exception of while it's actually being processed. Is that fair?
Exactly. But to add, while it is being processed, that can be done on encrypted drives.
Perfect.
I have one quick question. Sorry, we still have a few more minutes left. Don't look at the clock. And we started early, so
it's all zeros. It looks perfect.
Exactly. Thank you. We're out of time. I'm interested in just a little sidebar conversation around when you talk about innovation and you talk about cloud, right? Sometimes standards inhibit innovation. Right, we deal with this problem, right? You don't want any entity stepping in and saying, whoa, you can't do that because we've got to do this. Can we just have a little sidebar conversation about that in terms of how do we work to support, is it more best practices approach? How do you feel about the various standards bodies? And this isn't meant for, bitch fest or endorsement, right? I think it's important from an industry perspective, especially when we're talking about cloud, because this is so nascent. Really 10 years in, maybe, right?
Not for media.
Right, exactly. And also from a practical perspective. So I would just love to hear you guys riff and just casually talk about innovation and how those things impact innovation and how we all kind of need to continue to push that envelope and keep moving that forward.
Yeah. So I'll start with a couple of thoughts there. So I think... different domains require kind of a different level of rigor or kind of innovation profile. So the example I'd use is software versus hardware. So when I think about traditional broadcast and a fairly specification, standards heavy process where you do a lot of engineering, you do a lot of debate up front because you're going to have people largely building hardware, and in the past analog hardware, in the future digital hardware, But you see all the devices around here have to be interoperable, have to be interconnectable, have to play out the same formats on a global basis. And that standard in those areas actually drives a lot of innovation because many, many people can build compatible and interconnected devices. On the other hand, in software, I think because it's so malleable, because you can invent 1,000 different solutions to the same problem in software very quickly, it actually benefits you from less kind of upfront design by standardization or by committee and much more iterative and let success and let that innovation play out and let success or failure drive where the industry adopts. So if you think about things like formats, HLS, Dash, etc., those things largely emerged as a result of solving a problem in an innovative way and allowing the industry to gain speed and velocity. So that'd be my high-level 10,000-foot take on it.
You want to go? I have. So for me, I think this is actually a really important question because I think so. I have two hats, right? There's my IT background, which is very focused on standards and best practices and so on. And I think that those have to be treated a little bit differently. When we're talking about standards, it can be about the minimums, if you will, the best practices, the ideal. The best practices I think are always critical and useful. The standards are also applicable, but I think we need to create hardened environments where we can innovate at a rapid speed, which is, I think, where that question is really going. With my content production hat on, it's that I need to ensure that my engineers can certainly work as seamlessly, as quickly, as efficiently, and they're innovating at a constant tick, right? So again, to harden that environment, to give them that sandbox to play in, and to protect what is active production from that risk factor, but always protecting the environment within which they're working. And I don't think you have to impede that work, but you can wait to publish it, if you will, to impose it at risk until it is in fact also properly secured and all of those technologies are applied.
Yeah, that's what I would just add as well.
That's a great answer. What I said.
Yeah, what she said. Thank you. And I think, twofold. I think that question was strategic in the sense that this is the kind of discussions that we need to have to continue to foster innovation while maintaining security in any new application. Secondly, thank you so much. What a great session. What a great closer. I do believe we have one more session during the day. But